Humanity, the 21st century. A technological capitalist utopia, centuries in the making. The pinnacle of human existence to date. Order any product at the touch of a finger. Share your life with people on the other side of the planet. Instantly acquire any fact or fiction. Your TV knows what you want to watch before you do. Your car will drive itself as you enjoy the view. Algorithms preempt your desires. Everything is available right now. Instant noodles. Instant gratification. Instagram. Everything is consumable. And it's not stopping there.
And things are getting better.
The future promises even more. More efficiency, more connectivity, more speed. Everything is absolutely wonderful.
What is capitalism?
I think one of the easiest ways to understand capitalism is to contrast it with an institution that is often confused with capitalism, which is the market. And markets are institutions which allow people to engage in acts of exchange. So you've got more bread than you need, I've got more money than I need, and we meet in the middle and we trade. Now, after people have an exchange in a marketplace, they both go away pretty much as equals in some sense. The difference of capitalism is the presence, as the name suggests, of capital. And capital is something quite unusual and quite extraordinary. It refers to entities, whether they be pieces of technology, whether they be financial assets, or even, according to some theorists, human beings themselves, in which it's possible to make investment and to extract a return on that investment which is greater than the original investment.
It's an alternative to something like feudalism, right, which is a system we used to have. One, that most people are forced to survive through wage labour. Right? That's workers. Right? One feature of capitalism, workers. The other feature is that the ways in which resources are allocated and invested in society, right, within the mode of production and the means of production itself, are fundamentally guided by private individuals, capitalists, on the basis of capital accumulation. It's this accretion of value through profit.
The reason that growth happens is that there is the input of labour. There are certain people who are contributing more value into the productive process than they are being paid for. And it is that difference between what you pay the labourer and the amount of profit that the capitalist is able to withdraw from their investment that is what makes capitalism a uniquely exploitative system.
And capitalism exploits more than just humans.
Two million years, human species has been on the planet. 200,000 years, Homo sapiens. Just these last 200 years, is the Industrial Revolution, powered by coal, powered by fossil fuels, that this process of mass destruction has really taken wing.
It is the rapid acceleration of technological development and concomitant exploitation of resources that is destroying the planet around us. So we know that in our heart of hearts, but we repress it all the time. All of our economic systems, all of our technologies, all of the way we live, all of the way that we think about living, individually and collectively, is unsustainable.
I think there's a problem that we have in that we think of ourselves as separate from the wider world.
Yeah, there's a, you know, if you look at the dictionary definition of nature, it's all other living things apart from humans. And that there itself, we've created a binary. And it's effective because we are then able to control everything around us.
It means we take a rainforest that is the lungs of the planet, chop it all down, turn it into firewood, cannibalize, you know, our own body in that broader sense. Wow, get a good boost to GDP there, gross domestic product, economic growth.
Everything simply becomes a manifestation of a value. That's it. What is it worth? And so in its contemporary understanding, capitalism's attachment to value prevents the proliferation of a more flourishing earth.
Capitalism depends on this idea that it can keep on expanding. And I think we're more aware of that now than ever, that something has to give. And it's either going to be the system itself or the world on which it's sort of is a parasite of.
What does capitalism do to us?
It kind of overrides the sort of innate desires that we have just as human beings who, you know, are driven by our own survival, but actually implements new things for us to want. And that's not just the sense of a new car or a new washing machine, but actually it's far more fundamental. It implores us to desire a certain kind of lifestyle.
So in the sort of early part of capitalism, the focus was on creating workers. It was on shaping us as workers, as labourers. The real innovation of the 20th century is to begin to shape us as consumers, to start shaping the way in which we think of ourselves outside of work, in such a way that we identify ourselves and understand ourselves through options for purchasing things.
So that's what it does. It presents us with it excites us with ideas of opportunity, but really it's a system of restriction and sort of compartmentalization of what it means to be human.
Human desire is always artificial. As soon as it becomes something more than a matter of instinctual behavior, then we're into the realm of the artificial, and there's never been anything natural about human desire in that sense. What capitalism does is progressively intensify that artificiality and progressively reconfigures human desire. It can produce things which are entirely monstrous and which would never have occurred to any human to plan or to design. And so in that sense, capitalism produces a future which the human is unable to conceive of.
It feels like capitalism is almost beyond our control.
The world has become bewildering.
Progress is almost illusionary. It's a new iPhone every year. It's a new mod con, whatever that might be. It's electric cars. It's all the rest of it. These things are progress, but limited within a certain system, placed within the bounds of capitalism, rather than, you know, a real push forwards into something that is unrecognizable. But the effect of that on us, I think, is disastrous. We exist in that frenzied stasis where nothing really changes, and at the same time, everything changes all of the time.
We feel like we don't have enough time any longer. We feel that labour-saving devices such as computers and smartphones and so on seem to mean that we paradoxically have less time than we used to have.
But of course, This has always been how people try to sell technology to consumers, as a way of making your life easier, your life more enjoyable and stress-free, when actually the main use of technology is profit. It's to control humans, to extract data from them, to preempt their desires, to tell them what they want, to force them to want something so that they will buy the thing. And, of course, as we all know, iPhones are not created in response to a need. The new iPhone is always there already on the shelf before you need it, and it's the inherent obsolescence that are already built into these machines.
Capitalism sells our desires back to us with technology. There's no escaping the way it transforms us. And deep down, we know it. All those centuries to make flawless sugar cubes, and now we want them imperfect again. Artisanal lumps, a rejection of the perfection which machines have made possible for us.
Capitalism is the inverse of a social system. It's not a social system, it's the disassembly of all social systems. It has, of course, only one principle, which is the principle of profit. So it replaces all the complexities of the previously existing system with the simple axiomatic of profit.
Capitalism permeates our thoughts and drives our culture.
All the films of the last sort of two decades are so obsessed with the end of the world. But there's this peculiar tendency that in making the end of the world a kind of recognisable horror, a horror that we can relate to, it has to be framed as the ultimate change in which nothing changes. It's the present turned up to 11 almost. And why can't we think beyond that? Why is this sort of the end of the world just where we are exacerbated? And what does that actually say about how we understand the present? We know that the path we're on is going to be disastrous for us, but we can't think of a different path regardless. It has to be thought of in relation to capitalism as a system that is the only one we have.
So, why is it easier to imagine the end of the world than the end of capitalism?
We are coming to accept that capitalism, in its many adaptive manifestations and forms, seems to be inextinguishable. So the various movements, both philosophical and economic, and the revolutions that try to counter capitalism don't seem to be working, because capitalism is this protean monster, but not a sexy good monster, not a post-human monster, like a ubiquitous fascist monster. There is no outside of capitalism, so it's all-encompassing.
Capitalism seems inescapable. Life without it, unimaginable. It manipulates human desire, defines how we see ourselves. We can see no exit. So perhaps we don't try to. Instead of imagining escape, perhaps we should embrace the accelerating processes that are transforming our world. This idea is called accelerationism.
I think accelerationism is the only way to respond to a disappointing present.
It's a view that says change is happening, whether we like it or not, and all we can do is decide how to relate to it, how to relate ourselves to that change. Capitalism is taking us apart and turning us into something else, and all you can do is embrace it.
You know, there's a certain inevitability. There's no rolling back any of the ways in which technology and capitalism have disrupted our understanding of ourselves and our understanding of our world. We can't pretend that we're going to somehow return to a idyllic rural existence where we all are friends with the squirrels and the birds. So accelerationism is really a stance or an attitude toward the future that, rather than being defensive, is affirmative about that disassembly of what it is to be human and what human desire is.
And I think that there's something really humble about being able to situate oneself in a world where human agency and even humanness is no longer something that can be taken for granted.
Accelerationism accepts that, for better or for worse, the capitalist machine is remaking the world, and humanity is the fuel. Whether we like it or not, the process is accelerating. Rather than resist, all we can do is take our foot off the brake and hold on tight. Decades before anyone used the word accelerationism, many of its ideas were emerging from a group of academics called the Cybernetic Culture Research Unit, or CCRU. At its center was Nick Land, a now widely criticized philosopher whose recent work has strayed far from the accelerationist mainstream.
What was the CCRU?
The CCRU didn't exist. It was never part of any institution. It never had any official status. It was just a group of people who came together with an interest from various perspectives in understanding the relation between a rapidly changing technological environment and human culture.
Nick Land was a professional philosopher a long time ago in the 90s at the University of Warwick, and he became, along with a sort of group of other philosophical misfits called the Cybernetic Culture Research Unit, very interested in the development of culture at the end of the 20th century, coming out of the sort of acceleration of capitalism and what it was doing to the way in which people were living and what they wanted.
But at the time, it was quite anticipative of things that hadn't quite happened yet. The inhuman element of capitalism was taken by CCRU and is taken by accelerationism as a kind of bracing alternative to the existing model of what it means to exist and to be human. Anything that negates capitalism can be consumed and digested by it. Like, in a sense, an allegory. You know, like Terminator is like this liquid metal thing that can change into any shape and never stops and can never be defeated. The only thing we can do is participate enthusiastically rather than retreat defensively.
Embrace it. All you can do is kind of dissolve yourself into the flow, buckle in and enjoy the ride.
My name is Jolie. I'm your AI-generated tutor. I'm going to explain how we got here. You might think technology is a new thing, but you'd be mistaken. Humans and technology, like me, have always been connected.
If you look historically, then you can see, you know, there's technology from as soon as human beings get going. We are technological animals. We are using technologies to kind of mold our environment, to hunt, to communicate. Artistic practices and so on.
But humanity's relationship with machines really got going with the beginning of the Industrial Revolution in Europe in the 18th century. It was the birth of capitalism as we know and love it.
You don't have capitalism without a certain kind of technological development. And to grow capital, you need to partly always invest in machinery. So it's not an accident that we start to have capitalism once we have early forms of kind of mass production in different ways.
You know, the genius of the Industrial Revolution was to realize that anything that involves repetition can be done faster by a machine. And that should have really decreased the burden of human labour so that all those tedious tasks could be done by something else. And of course, when you get the spinning jenny or the mule, all these things that were increasing the possibilities of weaving and spinning, it should have meant that one person could do the work of seven and everybody could share the proceeds. We know it didn't. What happened in the early capitalist system was that a few people got rich and richer, and most people had an absolutely dreadful life. You know, my hometown, Manchester, life expectancy was 30. They called it the golden sewer.
Capital. The wealth which replaced the old barter system could be created more quickly and with less effort for the people who reaped the greatest rewards. More capital to invest meant more machines, which meant more production, which meant more capital to invest, which meant more machines, which meant more production.
There was definitely a period of almost decisive technological acceleration and an assemblage of technologies, really the telegraph, which facilitated that other great technology, capitalism, and the train that massively altered space-time in that way. And that happened fast.
Invaluable advice. Sky Arts, sponsored by St. James's Place.
In the several hundred years since the sort of beginning of capitalism and the Industrial Revolution, you know, mankind's technological capacity is exploded.
Within decades, you humans had completely transformed the world. Your machines allowed you to traverse the globe, to communicate at great distance, and to mass produce all the miraculous new things you desired. With the help of machines, humans came to dominate the planet in ways that were once unimaginable. Then, in the early 20th century, machines became computers. Machines were no longer limited to reducing human manual labor. They began to capture the brain's work too.
People deduce that there has been an acceleration in technological progress by looking historically at the gaps between significant world-changing technologies and seeing that those gaps have over time got smaller and smaller, so that in the last 100 years or so, we've seen technologies that have increased our ability to communicate, have made the world seem smaller, made space travel possible, and that if these gaps are decreasing, then the rate of technological progress must be accelerating.
In the 1960s, humans walked on the moon.
They've got the flag up now, and you can see the stars and stripes.
But perhaps the most significant technological advance was happening in secret. ARPANET was an American military system that connected individual computers in a distributed network. This system was the foundation of the Internet. Machines could work together. Within a few years, data could be shared across the world. And just as we machines became connected, humans became part of a global network.
I feel like I'm a cyborg, in that my phone and my computer are extensions of myself, in that my brain and my thinking and my ideas and work is very much inside of those technological artifacts and the networks.
I also wonder, though, whether it's fundamental to our humanity. Being a cyborg, if we think of it meaning the extending ourselves with tools.
If an alien were to come down to Earth and to try to describe what the human species is, they'd undoubtedly include a phone in the description of our species, right? It's not something that is any longer a detachable part of the human.
Technology, it seems, is inseparable from being human.
Humans have always been techno-scientific creatures. You're a cyborg as soon as you put on a pair of pants.
So, over the last 200 years, capitalism and technology have exploded. Humans have scrambled to make sense of it and tried to resist. But after 1968, when protests against capitalism in France and around the world came to nothing, philosophers and theorists started to think differently. They conceded that perhaps capitalism could not be overcome.
French philosophers Deleuze and Guattari most explicitly theorize it. Capitalism is a kind of fundamental formation that haunts all human social structures back to the dawn of time, and that every single human social configuration has been unconsciously erected as a way of warding off capitalism. And it's only finally in the early modern period that capitalism manages to get its teeth into history and its gears lock in the beginning of the Industrial Revolution in Western Europe. And once those motors start turning, capitalism is installed as an inevitability. And once that threshold is passed, accelerationism takes off and it's impossible to dislodge.
As soon as planetary capitalism begins to take hold, it produces a series of feedback loops which continually reinforce and accelerate its process so that everything that happened before only seems to make sense in the light of where capitalism is heading. So, in a sense, capitalism comes from the future, and once it's locked in on a planetary scale, it becomes impossible from within it to imagine any other fate for the planet.
Even protesting against capitalism requires living and participating in a capitalist
system. That informs a lot of environmentalism, of the Earth as a closed, self-regulating system. That if humans left it alone, or we extracted ourselves from the environment, that the world would create a perfect harmony and everything would be in constant equilibrium. And I think this is a unfortunate myth. Obviously, the sun's going to die out at some point, photosynthesis will stop. This idea that humans are somehow disrupting a perfect model of equilibrium and harmony is completely untrue. If you zoom out enough, environmentalism is always relative. I think we should ask, really, is environmentalism compatible with time? Can you sustain some kind of inert, regular system in an environment where things change and transform?
In a sense, to understand the relation between accelerationism and ecology, you'd have to go back to Georges Bataille, who was a theorist who tried to think ecology in the most absurdly massive, wide-scale sense in terms of the thermodynamics of the entire universe. He understood the Earth as being a system which is basically a kind of subsystem of the sun, whose only purpose or only vector really is just endless burning up resources until they're all expired and they're all gone. And that for him is the baseline of all economies and all ecologies. Although we think about human culture as being a kind of conservative or stable or economic system, in fact, it's all about just burning up matter. The human race is just like a massive volcano, effectively, spewing stuff up into the atmosphere.
On a global scale, accelerationism attempts to look at the present through the lens of the future, searching for signs of where capitalism is taking humanity and embracing those processes involved, no matter how hard they might be to stomach.
The more capitalism accelerates, the less it's going to be possible to make sense of where we are on the basis of where we were yesterday.
Capitalism, it seems, is accelerating both humanity and the planet towards a future in which human and planetary purpose are equally irrelevant.
How does accelerationism end?
Accelerationism ends differently for all of its participants. There's a point beyond which the human, as we understand it, will no longer exist. But in a sense, that's an imminent process that's happening already. It's already being torn to pieces slowly, and only retrospectively we're going to be able to look back and see the points at which certain elements of what we understood ourselves to be were no longer viable.
We have no choice. I mean, I think that we're so resigned to our fate at the mercy of these machines, because we see time after time, you know, we have no ability to resist.
And accelerationism is really the acknowledgement and the acceptance and the affirmation that we're going to continue down that path. And that path is an exploration. It's something that takes us somewhere we can't predict, but there's nothing much to lose. What is there to lose in leaving the human behind or transforming it into something else?
How would you explain accelerationism to a 5-year-old?
Just eat a whole packet of Haribo. You don't need to explain it to 5-year-olds, I think, is the answer to that. 5-year-olds have an instinctive understanding of accelerationism in that they don't have any cultural prejudices against what's artificial versus what's natural, against what's synthetic versus what's real, of simulation as opposed to reality. They are the real accelerationists, and we need to learn from them if we're going to survive.
Visually. Your design ideas are great.
Invaluable advice. Sky Arts, sponsored by St. James's Place.